You know, brethren, our country is still haunted by what happened over a month ago with the Sandy Hook Elementary School shootings. 26 lives were lost that day, and most of them were just little children. And I was surprised to learn recently that there was even a larger event that took place in our national history, in our school system, in another elementary school in Michigan. You know, there are two reasons probably, I think, why most of us never heard anything about the other one. It took place in 1927, which was a long time ago. And right after the incident happened in 1927, Charles Lindbergh had just crossed the Atlantic Ocean for the first time, so the news diverted from one thing, took its eyes off of that horrible event that took place, and they focused on Charles Lindbergh's successful flight across the Atlantic. I'd like to read you just a little bit, though, of what happened in 1927. For those of you that didn't hear much even recently about it after Sandy Hook, some people said that was the worst one in Sandy Hook, but it wasn't. And just a short piece here from the article says, "The Bath School disaster is the historical name of the violent attacks that were perpetrated by Andrew Kehoe on May 18, 1927, in Bath Township, Michigan, that killed 38 elementary school children, 6 adults, and injured 58 others. Kehoe first killed his wife that morning. He bombed his farm and his house. He set off major explosions at the Bath Consolidated School before committing suicide by detonating an explosion in his truck in front of the school. It was the deadliest mass murder in a school history and still is today in the United States. You know, both of these schools' tragedies have something linking them together. Even though they are 85 years apart, there's something that's linking them together. First off, they both occurred on the morning of a regular school day. No one had any idea what was going to take place that day. And we may ask, why would anyone get it into their heads to kill innocent children, these little innocent school children? Well, let's take our Bibles and let's turn over to 2 Timothy. 2 Timothy 3. And let's begin reading in verse 1. 2 Timothy 3 and verse 1. It says, "But know this, that in the last days perilous times will come, for men will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, unloving, unforgiving, slanderers without self-control, brutal, despisers of good, traitors, headstrong, haughty, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God." Does that sound like America today? Lovers of pleasure rather than God? God is totally out of the picture, pretty much. "Having a form of godliness, but denying its power, and from such people turn away." Yes, we know that we are in these last days. I think most of us can agree to that. But did you notice almost in the center of these scriptures, the descriptions of the people that will be in the last days, the word here is without self-control. Just the opposite of Galatians 5:22. Galatians 5:22, where self-control is mentioned as one of gifts of God's Holy Spirit. He gives us. It's the last one that's mentioned. God gives us that gift of the self-control. You know, we're to look at some examples today, brethren, in the Bible of people who practiced self-control and what the results were. and those who practice the works of the flesh. That's the opposite of fruits of the Spirit, the works of the flesh. And maybe it'll help us understand how human beings can allow themselves to drop as low as these people did in these massacres. Let's go over to Galatians 5. Galatians 5. And read what the works of the flesh are. Galatians 5, verse 19 says, "Now the works of the flesh are evident, which are adultery, fornication, uncleanness, licentiousness, idolatry, sorcery, hatred, contentions, jealousies, outbursts of wrath, selfish ambitions, dissensions, heresies, envy, murderers, drunkenness, rivalries, and the like, of which I tell you beforehand, just as I also told you in time past, that those who practice such things will not inherit the kingdom of God." You know, brethren, first off, we need to realize what is self-control. It's a gift God gives us, but what is it? Well, you may say, well, that's easy. It's having control over yourself. It's controlling your thoughts. It's your actions, your emotions. But that's not easy. It's not easy at all. Let's turn over to the book of Romans, chapter 7. And here, Paul, we know, battles with self-control. He himself battles with it. But let's read what he has to say. And I'm not going to read all of this, but just a short clip of it here. In Romans 7, verse 18, Paul states, "For I know that in me, that is, in my flesh, nothing good dwells. For to will is present with me, but how to perform what is good I do not find." Paul, and he goes on to reiterate it in different ways as we continue reading on, but Paul knew that self-control was a problem for himself. He preached self-control in his ministry that he did. He even mentioned it to Felix, the governor there, that one of the things that he preached to him was about self-control. And, of course, Felix didn't want to hear any of it and sent him away. But the Apostle Paul battled with it. You know, Satan's work of the flesh, as we know, is envy, jealousy, anger, murder, many of those things. And the first area I want to look in today of those works of the flesh is something that happened in the very beginning of the Bible. It was with Cain. So let's take our Bibles. Cain was the first man to lose control of his anger, which is one of the works of the flesh, and to kill his very own brother. Turn over to Genesis 4. If I can get there. Genesis 4, and we'll read here, verse 3. "And in the process of time it came to pass that Cain brought an offering of fruit of the ground to the Lord. Abel also brought of the firstlings of his flock and of their fat. And the Lord respected Abel and his offering, but he did not respect Cain and his offering. And Cain was very angry." Works of the flesh here. No self-control. "And his countenance fell. So the Lord said to Cain, why are you angry, and why has your countenance fallen?" He could see it on his face. "If you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, sin lies at the door, and its desire is for you, but you should rule over it." Self-control. God's telling him, you should rule over it. "Now Cain talked with Abel his brother, and it came to pass when they were in the field that Cain rose against Abel his brother and killed him. And the Lord said to Cain, where is Abel your brother? And he said, I do not know. Am I my brother's keeper? And he said, what have you done? What have you done? That's what God's response to him was right there. God asked Cain, what have you done? Just as we might ask Adam Lanza, what have you done? And Andrew Kehoe, what have you done? You could ask that. How did these men lose control over themselves and commit the horrendous acts that they did? It's because they didn't, and it didn't happen overnight what they did. They let Satan in, it's what they did, with the works of the flesh. You know, Andrew Kehoe, the 55-year-old school board, I'll read you just a little bit more from the article to give you a little of this mindset. Andrew Kehoe, the 55-year-old school board treasurer, he was on the school board treasurer, was angry after his defeat in the spring of 1926 of being elected as a township clerk. He was thought to have planned his murderous revenge after that public defeat for the next year. He planned this horrendous act. He was very difficult on the school board to deal with, and personal people said that he was a very difficult person to deal with. And in June 1926, things were even starting to go worse for him. His house was being foreclosed on, his farm. People noticed that he stopped working on his farm, and for the next year, he concentrated nothing but on what his goal was to do, revenge, because he was not elected. Kehoe purchased explosives. He discreetly planted them on the property under the school. Kehoe had used time detonators to ignite hundreds of pounds of dynamite, which he had securely planted in the school over that year. As rescuers began working at the school, they discovered many more areas of dynamite placed underneath the school's basement. They found almost 500 pounds more of dynamite placed there. Kehoe wanted to blow the entire school up. He drove up that morning. He stopped. He used a rifle to detonate the dynamite inside his shrapnel-filled truck. He killed himself that morning, and then he killed the superintendent who was outside and several other nearby people who were injured from the explosion. And before he left, he had killed his mother. He had killed his wife before he left. He blew up his farmhouse to distract the fire department and the rescue people to go to his house. As he passed them on the way to the school, it was time that it would go off after the explosion at the house so no one would be there. You know, it didn't happen overnight. He used no self-control in what he did in his life. His anger built, it was totally out of control. Just like with the Sandy Hook thing. Just like Cain, when he slew Abel, he was totally out of control with his brother. You know, God warned Cain when he told him, if you do not do well, sin lies at the door. God warned Cain. Its desire is for you, but you should rule over it. You should have that self-control. And having control over anger before it builds up, it's what you need to do before it gets out of control. Adam Lanza and Andrew Kehoe never let that enter their minds. Let's turn over to the book of Samuel. It's another example of the works of the flesh. Samuel was a man that God... Well, let's just turn over there. 1 Samuel 18. We'll begin reading in verse 7. Now here David was coming back from battling the Philistines. And in this town, in the city, the women began to sing and dance. And in verse 7 it says, they were singing, Saul has slain his thousands and David his 10,000s. Then Saul was very angry, and the saying displeased him, and he said, they have ascribed to David 10,000s, and to me they have ascribed but 1,000s. Now what more can he have but the kingdom? So Saul eyed David from that day forward, and it happened on the next day, the very next day, that the distressing spirit from God came upon Saul, and he prophesied inside the house. So David played music with his hand, as at other times, but there was a spear in Saul's hand. Saul let go of self-control. He had anger of works of the flesh. Saul cast the spear, for he said, I will pin David to the wall with it, but David escaped the presence twice. You know, Saul showed no self-control. He showed the works of the flesh. But he was trying to kill David. But let's see what David does in a similar situation. On the other hand, David showed the opposite of that. He showed extreme self-control when he had met Saul later on. When Saul was chasing David in the cave. We're going to look at that. Let's turn to chapter 24, a few pages over. David's attitude in comparison to Saul's. It says in here in verse 2, it says of chapter 24, then Saul took 3,000 chosen men because they had heard David was out in the mountains there in the wilderness of Engedi, I guess is where you say it. Saul took 3,000 chosen men. He was so jealous and envious of David, and he wanted to kill him, that he picked 3,000 chosen men of Israel and went to seek David and his men on the rocks of the wild goats. So he came to the sheep's fold of the road where there was a cave. And Saul went in to attend to his needs. He went in the cave. And I'll paraphrase a little of this. You all know the story that David and his army or men, the number that he had, were back there in the back of the cave. Saul didn't know that. So while he was in there, David's men wanted him to kill Saul. But David went up and he cut a piece of Saul's robe off and took it back with him. And we read in verse 5, now it happened afterwards that David's heart troubled him because he had done this. He had cut Saul's robe, and he said to his men, the Lord forbid that I should do this thing to my master, the Lord's anointed, to stretch out my hand against him, seeing he is the anointed of the Lord. So David restrained his servants with these words and did not allow them to rise up against Saul. And Saul got up from the cave and went on his way. And David also rose up afterward and went out of the cave and called out to Saul, saying, my Lord, the king. And when Saul looked behind him, Saul turned around. David had his head bent down, so he didn't know really who he was talking to or who was talking to him. He stooped his face to the earth, and he bowed down. David bowed down. And David said to Saul, why do you listen to the words of the men who say, indeed, David seeks your harm? Look, this day your eyes have seen that the Lord delivered you today into my hand in the cave, and someone urged me to kill you, but my eye spared you, and I said, I will not stretch out my hand against my Lord, for he is the Lord's anointed. That was David's reaction. Saul would have killed him right away. And if we skip on down here to verse 16, so it was when David had finished speaking these words to Saul that Saul said, is this your voice, my son David? When he heard his voice, he realized who it was. And Saul lifted up his voice and wept. And he said to David, you are more righteous man than I, for you have rewarded me with good whereas I have rewarded you with evil. And you have shown this day how you have dealt well with me, for when the Lord delivered me into your hand, you did not kill me. For if a man finds his enemy, will he let him get away safely? Therefore, may the Lord reward you with good for what you have done to me this day. You didn't take his life. David didn't want to do that to God's anointed. And now I know indeed that you shall surely be king, and the kingdom of Israel shall be established in your hand. You know, as a result of David exercising that self-control, we also see that he exercised the fruits of the spirit of humility as well. Now, there's a proverb, we don't have to turn there, but in Proverbs 25:28, it describes an individual living out of control. Whoever has no rule over his own spirit is like a city broken down without walls. That's what Proverbs 25:28 says. Whoever has no rule over his own spirit is like a city broken down without walls. You are defenseless against the works of the flesh. You know, in ancient times, a city with walls around it was its security, its fortress. And if your city was not in, walls were not in good shape, you were vulnerable to attack. And that was a very common way back in those days. Well, it's just like someone of us today. Those of us may lack self-control. We're like that city that has no defense. If you're lacking self-control, they are not able to resist the things that destroy their lives and the lives of others. It creeps in. There's another person in the Old Testament that had self-control issues, probably more so than most people in the Bible. He was a judge. His name was Samson. Samson lost control of his life. Samson had lust of the flesh. Lust of the flesh. Let's turn and read there in Judges. You know, he was born at a special time in Israel's history. Samson was. Seven times had the nation of Israel rebelled away from God. And this time God used the Philistines, which God used to punish and oppress Israel for 40 years. And they were the worst enemy. But Samson reigned for 20 years during that time. The word Samson means bright as the sun. That's what the name means, bright as the sun or sunshine. And in the darkest times of Israel's time, God brought Samson onto the scene. He was a Nazarite, which means that he was different. He was called for a purpose, and that was to kill the Philistines, basically. But he was different. He separated. He was to have no wine or fruit of the vine, and he couldn't cut his hair, being a Nazarite. He couldn't cut his hair. And as I said, he became the judge of Israel for 20 years. Well, Samson had been given great strength from God. It's read, I won't turn to it, I did read it earlier, but, you know, he was reported that he killed 1,000 Philistines with the jawbone of a donkey, it says. He had great strength. I mean, he killed 1,000 Philistines. Can't even imagine that. And there was a time when he killed a lion and ripped it in half and tore it apart with his bare hands. You know, you may say, well, what did Samson look like? I know I've seen the movie, and I'm sure all of you have seen the movie of Samson and Delilah. But did he look like an Arnold Schwarzenegger in his prime years, I should say, when he was a weightlifter and young, with full of muscles? I don't think he did. I think he was a normal, regular person because of what Delilah asked him. What was his secret? Where did he get his strength? If she could see he was physically strong, she would have not probably asked him that question. But she says, where do you get your strength? How do you get your strength? It wasn't obvious. It was a supernatural strength that God gave Samson. He gave him that strength. When he killed that lion, it says he gave him that strength. You know, Samson was a bold man before men because of that strength that God gave him. But he had a weakness. He was weak before women. He had a great weakness for women. He had the Spirit of God upon him, but he lived for the works of the flesh. He was called upon to declare war upon the enemies of God. That was his job. But many times we find he was basically socializing, fraternizing with the enemy of God. That's what he was doing. He wanted to do that. His parents didn't want him to do that. But I guess you could say Samson fought the battles in the daytime, and he broke God's commandments in the nighttime with his life and the way he lived it. Let's turn and read Judges 16:1. It says, then Samson went to Gaza and saw a harlot there and went into her. And this wasn't the only person, but right away, Samson liked, I guess you could say, loose women. He went into a harlot. And four verses down later, it says, now afterwards it happened that he loved a woman in the valley of Sorek whose name was Delilah. And the lords of the Philistines came up to her and said to her, entice him and find out where his great strength lies and by what means we may overpower him, that we may bind him to afflict him. And every one of us will give you 1,100 pieces of silver. So she had a commission and a job to do. She was to find out his secret. She was to find out his secret, where his strength was coming from. Have you ever heard of a saying? It says this: sin takes you further than you want to go, will keep you longer than you plan to stay, and will cost you far more than you plan to pay. You have to think about that a minute, you know, and ponder that. But sin takes you further than you want to go, will keep you longer than you plan to stay, and will cost you far more than you plan to pay. And that's what happened with Samson at the end of his life. Proverbs 5:3-5 says, you don't have to turn there, but it says, for the lips of a strange woman dropped as an honeycomb, and her mouth is smoother than oil, but her end is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. Her feet go down to death. Her steps take hold on hell. You know, at the end of Samson's life, as an Israel's judge, this is where he was in his life. No self-control at all. He allowed Delilah eventually, not the first time, but eventually caved in. And he told the secret of his hair, didn't he? He gave that secret to her. And as soon as they cut his hair, Samson was like any other man. He didn't have that strength. It was gone. God took it away. They gouged his eyes out. Samson was spiritually and physically blinded. But is this the end of Samson's life? Is this the end of Samson's story? Is he finished? If he is, why is he mentioned in the book of Hebrews? You know he's in the book of the faith chapter? Samson is? Is God finished with him? I don't think so. Let's read Judges 16, verses 23. Well, we won't start in 23, but they've captured Samson. And this is my highlight is Samson dies with the Philistines. And they're celebrating their God, and they're having this big event, and they're thanking their God for delivering them, Samson, to them, their enemy. But we'll start reading in verse 27. It says, "Now the temple was full of men and women. All the lords of the Philistines were there. In fact, there were about 3,000 men and women on the roof who watched while Samson performed." This is when he was in bondage as a prisoner there. "Then Samson called to the Lord, saying, 'O Lord God, remember me, I pray. Strengthen me, I pray, just this once, O God, that I may with one blow take vengeance on the Philistines for my two eyes.' And Samson took hold of the two middle pillars which supported the temple, and he braced himself against them, one on his right and the other on his left. Then Samson said, 'Let me die with the Philistines.' And he pushed with all his might, and the temple fell on the lords and all the people who were in it. So the dead that he killed at his death were more than he had killed his entire life. And his brothers and all, and his father's also came down and took him and brought him up and buried him between Zohorah and Eshtol in the tomb of his father, Moham. He had judged Israel 20 years. Samson had lost control of his life. He didn't even know it until his final days, until the end of his life when he remembered his purpose, what it was from God. Finally, brethren, the Bible says that there's a part of our body that is restless, evil, full of deadly poison. Do you know what part of our body that is? It's the tongue. It's talking about the tongue. It's restless, evil, full of deadly poison. That's the tongue. Take your Bibles. Let's turn over to the book of James. And that's where self-control can be a major problem, is with the tongue. Let's read in James 3. And my subtitle ahead is The Untamable Tongue. But we'll skip down a little bit. It says in verse 5, "Even so the tongue is a little member and boasts great things. See how great a forest a little fire kindles. And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. The tongue is so set among our members that it defiles the whole body and sets on fire the course of nature, and it is set on fire by hell. For every kind of beast and bird and reptile and creature of the sea is tamed and has been tamed by mankind. But no man can tame the tongue. It is an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. With it we bless our God and Father, and with it we curse men." You know, I work with a bunch of people on my job, and they go around claiming to be Christians. And they curse every other three or four words. They take God's name in vain. They use foul language. They talk of things that I can't even speak of here that I hear them saying in conversations. Yet, with their tongue, they claim and bless God and say they're Christian, but really, they're just cursing men. They're evil. "Out of the same mouth proceeds blessings and cursings, my brethren. These things ought not to be so." What we say many times, brethren, tells us what we really are, doesn't it? Tells us what we're really thinking. And without the fruit of self-control being exercised. If anyone thinks, it says in James 1:26, if anyone thinks he is religious and does not bridle his tongue, but deceives his heart, this person's religion is worthless. James 1:26. That's kind of the way I feel about some of the guys I work with at work. Their religion is worthless because of what they say and do. You know, it was mentioned in the FI Online a couple of weeks ago that Jesus Christ always, Mr. Thompson said, that he always knew exactly how much to say and what to say at the right circumstances. He had self-control over his tongue. In conclusion, brethren, turn to Galatians 5:16, where we started. Galatians 5:16. This, brethren, is how we have self-control. You ask, how do we have it? It's in Galatians 5:16. I say then, walk in the Spirit, and you shall not fulfill the lust of the flesh. Walk in the Spirit, and you will not fulfill the lust of the flesh. For the flesh lusts against the Spirit, and the Spirit against the flesh, and these are contrary to one another, so that you do not do things that you wish. But if you are led by the Spirit, you are not under the law. And, of course, we already read what the works of the flesh were. If we properly exercise one of the gifts God gives us in the fruits of the Spirit, and there are others, there are love, joy, kindness, meekness, but self-control is the last one. And if we have self-control, we will exemplify all of the other fruits of the Spirit. But if you don't have self-control, you're not going to exemplify the other fruits. It will benefit those around us if we use self-control. In some ways, we might consider this virtue the most important because without self-control, the works of the flesh cannot be overcome. You can't overcome them if you don't control and have self-control. And the other aspects of the fruits of the Spirit would not be evident either if you didn't have self-control. So it is very important. One day, brethren, we will never hear of tragedies like in Newtown, Connecticut, or in Bath, Michigan. And I know, brethren, we're all looking forward to that time.